You're listening to Straight Heat on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, so are we having fun with technology?
I got him.
Got him? All right, right now joining us on the hotline, covering the NFL for SI, for the Monday Morning Quarterback, Andy Benoit joins us. What's up, Andy?
Hey, Patrick, how are you?
Doing good, brother. I hope you liked the Ramones, because Jacob had it cranked up pretty hard.
I'm in that kind of mood right now.
Man, it's been a crazy first couple of weeks here of the NFL preseason, and this helmet rule, I guess I don't want to say the helmet rule, I want to say the enforcement of the helmet rule has been, let's say it's been peaks and valleys, and they're going to have a conference call tomorrow to further try to figure out how to smooth these peaks and valleys. Is it that they didn't plan this very well, or is this a lack of education of officials to you?
I think it's probably a mix of both. They're learning on the fly as they do it, which isn't a great look for the league now. But we've seen this before when they changed the illegal contact rule several years ago, when they changed how they enforce pass interference. It's what the preseason's for. And I understand people's frustration with it and certainly coaches. But, you know, I'll be honest, I'm with Bill Belichick and what he said today, too. This isn't how tackling was supposed to be taught anyway. And a lot of teams weren't teaching to tackle with your head. So there are teams that are going to have less of an adjustment than other teams, because those teams, the teams that aren't adjusting, they've been tackling the right way all along. This is how guys are supposed to be tackling anyway.
And I understand that part, but then we see other plays where, like, for example, Niners, Texans, and the tackler, you know, on the special teams, his head never touches the player, and they flagged them anyway.
Yeah, I hear you. And that's the issue, is the application of the rule and getting officials trained for seeing it and identifying it. And that's what the league will have to figure out. And they're in a tough spot because they've branded this a player safety measure rather than like pass interference. That's not a player safety. That's just an integrity of the game approach. So once you put a player safety, it's hard to change it once you put. Remember when they put the referee in the backfield a few years ago, and they said it's for the referee's safety, and then the game started being played, and they thought, oh, maybe it's not a great idea. Now, turned out to be fine. It probably was the right idea, but they never had the option to put the ref back in the middle of the umpire, that is, back in the middle of the field, because they'd already said it's for his safety. So if you put him back, now you're making him unsafe. It's a little bit of a problem with this helmet rule is that they didn't specify crown of the helmet when they wrote the rule. So if they do that now, it almost looks like they're reducing the safety measure rather than just fine-tuning it. So it's a PR act as much as anything, which is what, if we're being honest, that's what the rule was a little bit to begin with anyway, and that's what the league has to do. I don't envy the guys that have to make this decision and figure out what to do from here.
He's Andy Benoit. He covers the NFL for Sports Illustrated and the Monday Morning Quarterback with us on the hotline. Andy, I need your help with this new roughing the passer rule, because I saw a guy make a textbook sack and get flagged for roughing the passer on a sack. How can you rough the passer on a sack if you don't hit him in the head?
Well, what they want, there's been a lot of frustrating roughing the passer rules. What they want is players removing the extra force. So if you remember when, and this was an egregious example, but that's what paints a great illustration, when Tony Siragusa back in the 2000 AFC divisional round, I think it was, he landed on Rich Gannon and took Gannon out of the game because he used his full body weight on him. That's the concept that they're wanting to eliminate. And I understand the frustration with it, but let's remember this. Ask Houston Texans fans or ask Indianapolis Colts fans what it's like to not have a quarterback. When those quarterbacks go down, those teams almost always go with them. So the league, if they're over the top in protecting the QBs, it's something to be up in arms about, but only temporarily, because I think in an honest moment, we'd all choose to have the quarterbacks, all of them, stay healthy anyway.
So how do you tackle a Ben Roethlisberger or a Cam Newton or a big quarterback if you're not allowed to use your weight?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's a great question. I think what will be interesting to see, Patrick, is if coaches start teaching defenders to go for the ball more rather than go for sacks. Because going for the ball is a relatively safe way. The ball is not usually near the QB's head. It's certainly not near the QB's knees or lower extremities. So do we see defenses emphasize going after the ball rather than after the quarterback because the QBs become hard to legally hit? I could very well see pass rushing coaches emphasizing that now.
I mean, I understand, you know, I always go to the Anthony Barr hit on Aaron Rodgers last year where he hits him, the ball's already gone. And the debate is, was it one step? Was it two steps? How many steps did he take before he hit Aaron Rodgers after the ball was gone? But when the quarterback still has the ball, like, to me, that should be a totally different situation.
Yeah, and especially when he has the ball in the pocket. That's a dicey one. Very dicey one. You know, we'll have to see how it plays out. This stuff has a way of leveling itself out, too, though. There are a lot more egregious preseason and September calls than there are December and playoff calls.
Andy Benoit, Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback, with us on the hotline. Andy, one more outside the field, then we'll get on to the field. The league announced Eli Rogers of the Steelers is going to get a one-game rip for what appears to be the substance abuse policy. So not PEDs, but something outside of PEDs. He gets a one-game suspension. Trevon Boykin gets a one-game suspension for domestic assault. Now, I thought domestic assault had a six-game automatic rip. Is that what happened with Ezekiel Elliott? How is there any rhyme or reason to how guys get suspended for domestic assault, or does Roger Goodell literally just throw a die and see what number comes up?
It's that. I mean, I would be on your side on that. That's one that the league, you know, we talked about this roughing the passer and hitting and all that, and we're saying, well, they're adjusting on the fly, give them some time, basically. This one, they've been adjusting on the fly, and it's not the same kind of thing at all. It's a whole different issue, and it's an embarrassing issue that the inconsistency has been there, because that whole six-game ban that they've laid in place, there's been times where people have felt it was applied overly aggressively and maybe unjustly, like in the Ezekiel Elliott case. I think some people felt that way. And there have been times where it hasn't appeared to be adhered to, like what you just referenced, or Jameis Winston getting three games there, and some suspect maybe he and the league arranged a deal so there wouldn't be a drawn-out hearing process or drawn-out arbitrator. So, yeah, that's a tough one to deal with, and the league, quite frankly, has not done a great job with it.
All right, Andy, let's get to on the field. Josh Gordon back in camp with the Browns. One, how long do you think it'll be before Josh Gordon is really up to speed and able to play? And two, did Dez Bryant miss his opportunity to get signed?
To answer the Gordon thing, he got up to speed decently last year when he came up back late in the season. I mean, he didn't look like the Josh Gordon that led the league in receiving a few years before, but you could see some of the talent there still shine through. So I would imagine he'll be relatively, he's been around more this year than last year, and it's a different part of the season, it's a different part of the training process. I would imagine he'll be relatively up to speed. And what I'm curious about is how much are they changing their passing game scheme with the Jarvis Landry acquisition? Because last year they didn't have any receivers they trusted, and they had to run a very simplified passing game. They didn't have any experienced high football IQ wideouts. So they've got that now with Landry and Gordon, a veteran back. Do they change their passing game, and is that an adjustment for Gordon learning new approaches? As far as Dez Bryant, I think he absolutely missed his opportunity. I was amazed that he got offered $21 million over 3 years by the Ravens. I don't remember what the guarantee was. But, I mean, whoever told him to turn that down, or if it was himself telling him to turn it down, whoever did gave him horrendous advice. And Dez Bryant will probably, at best, if he signs anywhere this year, he's going to be signed by as a number four receiver to most teams because he doesn't play in the slot, so it's hard to peg him as your number three. and he doesn't run particularly well anymore, which is why he slowed down in Dallas last year. He's a pretty limited. He's had a great career. He's at this point, based on the strengths he has that have been reduced, just I don't know if he's gotten old or what his deal is, but he does not run the same way that he did early in his career. But just based on those little changes, he's lost a lot of his gains.
Andy Benoit, Monday Morning Quarterback, Sports Illustrated, covering the NFL with us on the hotline. Andy, of the rookie quarterbacks, who do you think is going to be starting, let's say, by week three?
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Probably Josh Allen, because of what went on with A.J. McCarron there, and is he healthy or not healthy, McCarron, that is. I think Allen's got a good chance to start. He gives you some dimension in the running game as well, schematically, and I think that's a big deal for Buffalo and the way they're built offensively. Darnold has had an impressive preseason. I'm not convinced I think a lot of people would say Darnold's the answer to your question, Patrick. I can almost guarantee you there are a lot of coaches on that Jets staff that say, yeah, we know Darnold looked good. Teddy Bridgewater's probably been better than we thought. We want Josh McCown in there still because we know at least he's going to run the offense the way it's designed, and he's going to take what's there for him. I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying that's the way a lot of coaches think, and that's how guys like Josh McCown have stuck around as long as they have. So I think Darnold has a good chance probably to take over that starting job, but I'm sure the Jets feel they have a playoff-caliber defense. And McCown quietly had a very respectable season last year, and that's not going to be lost on some of those decision-makers in New York.
Andy, Adrian Peterson signed with Washington yesterday, and Jay Gruden today is saying he wants to play him on Friday. Is that Jay just drumming up some media attention, or is he actually looking to play Adrian Peterson 5 days after he signed him?
I would hope he wants to play him because he needs to see what Adrian Peterson has. At this point, Adrian Peterson, I mean, running backs, and maybe he's already hit as well. I'm sure there are people that would say he has. I thought there were times last year that he still showed signs of burst, especially when he was in Arizona, not so much New Orleans. But they need to find out that those bursts and those signs of burst are still there, and if so, in what context and how often will they be available? And so I would get Adrian Peterson on the field. I'd play him for the whole first half if I'm Jay Gruden and I'm serious about having him around.
Andy, AFC South, every team has reason to hope that they will be better this year. Quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson coming back from injury, Andrew Luck coming back from injury, Blake Bortles had offseason wrist surgery. He says his hand feels better than it has in years. Marcus Mariota, a year removed now from a surgery and a bad injury, coming off a bad year. How would you rank the four quarterbacks in the AFC South?
I would put Andrew Luck number one still. We need to see what he is, of course, but people don't realize how tremendous of a quarterback he was when he was healthy a few years ago. I mean, he was as good as anyone in the NFL. He has got a great ability to extend the play without breaking down the play, and that's a really rare trait. Carson Wentz has it too. Tom Brady has developed it over the years. So Luck, to me, I would err on the side of taking that top-shelf superstar every time. As far as those other three go, Watson's probably the idea for who's next up in that line. He's a fascinating player to me, Patrick, because I think on the positive side last year, he showed a willingness to play from within the pocket and not use his mobility as a crutch, which is unusual for a young, talented mobile QB. Usually those guys have developed a habit of running around, and that's what they rely on. You could see on film every week Watson got better at playing within the pocket. So his long-term projection is shining bright because of that. That's a big deal in the NFL. Now, I think his short-term projection has some more ups and downs ahead of it because what was also evident on film is his decision-making was not always refined. And he took a lot of chances that could have easily been bad turnovers that didn't happen to be turnovers. His film was not always as smooth as his stat line suggests, and his stat line was not flawless. He did have some picks. So I could see Watson being one of those guys that learns the hard way this year, 18 interceptions, something like that, maybe three in a game, then a few games he's fine, just ups and downs, which is to be expected. But overall, I mean, if you're asking me who I'm taking long-term, I would think long and hard about Watson over Luck, just because of the unique skill set Watson has.
Andy Benoit, Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback, covers the NFL with us on the hotline. Follow him on Twitter at Andy_Benoit. Andy, really appreciate your time. Lots of great info. Let's catch up soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Andy Benoit, SI, Monday Morning Quarterback, with us on the hotline. Coming up next, this pitcher is certainly enjoying his new digs.